We are going to move on to our second agenda item, which is the audit implications of IFRS financial statements and SEC filings. There's a couple of new faces here at the table. I'd just like to introduce Julie Earhart, who's Deputy Chief Accountant at the SEC over international matters, is joining us for this discussion. Welcome, Julie. And to lead us in this discussion are Greg Skates, Deputy Chief Auditor, and Brian Degano, who is our newest Associate Chief Auditor, recently joined the staff from Deloitte. Brian was in the fraud and forensic area, and he also spent a couple of years at the FASB as a professional fellow, and Brian's here to help lead us through this discussion this morning, so I turn it over to you two. Thanks.
Thank you, Tom. As you're aware, the SEC recently issued a proposed rule change and a concept release related to financial statements prepared in accordance with the International Financial Reporting Standards, or commonly referred to as IFRS. Under the proposal release, foreign private issuers that prepare their financial statements in accordance with these International Financial Reporting Standards, as published by the International Accounting Standards Board, or IASB, would no longer be required to reconcile to U.S. GAAP. The concept release seeks feedback on whether the SEC would permit, should permit U.S. companies to prepare their financial statements in accordance with the International Financial Reporting Standards. Currently, foreign private issuers are required to reconcile their financial statements to U.S. GAAP. To address quality control concerns related to foreign associated firms that audit their filings, the AICPA's SEC practice section back in 1999 issued guidance in a document we commonly refer to as Appendix K. Appendix K sought to enhance the quality of SEC filings by seeking to involve individuals knowledgeable about U.S. accounting, auditing, and independent standards with SEC filings audited by these foreign associated firms. The PCAOB, as you're aware, adopted the Appendix K as part of our interim quality control standards. As was alluded to this morning in our discussion, the European Union has been pushing towards the companies in the European Union to adopt IFRS in the preparation of financial statements. In conjunction with that, some of the auditing firms have created global offices to consult on IFRS issues and the implementation of those standards. These global offices, in some cases, perform these reviews that are noted in Appendix K. This brings me to my first series of questions, the first question being, to what extent does Appendix K enhance the effectiveness of the audit performed on the financial statements of foreign private issuers? Also, have the auditing procedures applied to U.S. GAAP, to the U.S. GAAP reconciliation pursuant to Appendix K resulted in increased consistency in the application of IFRS by foreign private issuers? I'll be glad to take comments now from the members of the SAG on this first series of questions. Sam Ranzillo.
Let me try to address this question. I think your sub-question is actually a misnomer. And I think that the question ought to read, have the auditing procedures applied to the U.S. GAAP reconciliation? I don't think it actually relates to the auditing procedures applied, but whether, I think your question is getting more to the point of, does the U.S. GAAP reconciliation itself result in a more consistent application of IFRS? And I think the answer to that is yes. I think that that is accepted, that the existence of the U.S. GAAP reconciliation does, to some extent, affect one's application of IFRS. And I will say that from my own viewpoint. While I think that that is true, I also don't believe that's a compelling reason to keep the U.S. GAAP reconciliation. As it relates to Appendix K, I think that Appendix K and the procedures as currently constituted under Appendix K does improve the effectiveness of the U.S. GAAP reconciliation. I mean, I believe that the majority, the focus of Appendix K is, as you noted, Greg, in several different areas. But it does improve, it does affect the quality of the reconciliation to U.S. GAAP. That said, and consistent with my firm's and my own views in our comment letter on the elimination of the U.S. GAAP reconciliation, we think that in a world where there was no U.S. GAAP reconciliation, that it doesn't make sense, that Appendix K no longer makes sense in the world that we live in today. It's very different than the world we lived in 1999. And when you strip out a U.S. GAAP reconciliation, it, in my mind, fails to be a compelling case any longer to have an Appendix K filing reviewer. Now, we still support the inspection procedures in Appendix K, even in a world without U.S. GAAP reconciliation. But where you strip out the U.S. GAAP reconciliation, I'm not sure that Appendix K makes sense any longer.
Upkeepers?
Thank you, Greg. I do remember 1999. I remember working with colleagues in the firms creating Appendix K in the first place, and I think it might be instructive to just mention a couple bits of background. I think the two things that were compelling at the time were the desire, the need to try and promote greater consistency within the network firms, the firms that have, you know, global reach, your firm in Chile or your firm in, you know, pick a country, doing a U.S. gas gap audit, on U.S. GAAP financial statements, either reconciled or prepared in accordance with U.S. GAAP. I think there were concerns that the level and depth of knowledge around the globe on these matters was often limited in large part to U.S. expats who might be assigned, you know, to various countries. I think further, the staff of the SEC was very keen on trying to get confident that an audit report signed by, even though it may be a member firm, let's say our network, the letterhead is still, you know, Bogota or wherever it is, that the firms have the requisite qualifications. And at the time, I think, you know, we sort of came together with this idea of a file reviewer. And, you know, as applied in practice, some of the firms have used expats who are in country and therefore knowledgeable. Others perhaps have used a U.S.-based reviewer, and others still have other approaches to it. But to Sam's point, I think that, you know, we shouldn't assume that file review, you know, gets down into the weeds on specific audit procedures so much as looks at the reconciliation, queries the engagement team to get confident and comfortable about their knowledge. And in the last 10 years, there's been a sea change in the ability and capability of partners in almost all geographies now, as the number of foreign filers has grown. And I think that if you try and reduce it to its essence, a lot of the things came out in terms of questions about the U.S. GAAP reconciliation. So I'm agreeing with Sam that if that reconciliation is no longer part and parcel of the filing in question, pursuant to changes the SEC might make, you know, I'm just not sure that you get as much out of that as we might have 10 years ago. Having said that, I do think, to your basic question, I think it has helped promote consistency in audits, and I think it's taken places where, if for whatever reason it was, you know, it might have been a little subpar, it was a good mechanism to ferret that out and make improvements. But, you know, to suggest that because of that, audit quality overall has risen dramatically, I think, is a vast overstatement.
Christy Wood.
On the issue of reconciliation, there are a couple of points I want to make. The first is that the Audit and Accounting Committee of the ICGN, of which I am chair, did not support reconciliation, and the committee could not decide. And so the fact that the letter doesn't support that is not necessarily clear in the letter, and the letter is not necessarily representative of the views of the committee. And so that's point number one. Second point that I think is important is that to the extent that there is valuable information for investors in Appendix K, I think that it would be unfortunate to lose it. And so in the sense that there is that it is helpful and that there's information there, we would want to be supportive.
Damon Silvers.
Yeah, thank you. Perhaps just to sort of echo in some more detail what Christy just said, although, to be honest with you, I couldn't quite follow the politics of the ICGN and what you said.
But I can't either sometimes.
Probably not that relevant. Clearly, the Appendix K has this very specific sort of application to a regime in which a gap reconciliation occurs. We move to a regime in which no such reconciliation occurs, in which an IFRS-based financial statement is the information is the audited financial statement that appears in the U.S. market. That circumstance would seem to very much increase the importance and relevance of some oversight of the audit process that attests to the accuracy of that financial statement. Even more so, I think, because, and I may misunderstand these things, and so someone will correct me, but that the relationship really between the U.S.-based firm and its foreign affiliates is a pretty close one, and that we're not asking something radical here, that there be some oversight on the part of what is effectively, and again, this may not be politically correct to say this, but what is effectively apparent over a subsidiary. And that we have processes to ensure that these new IFRS-based financial statements are reliable. That would seem to suggest that we need to make some changes to Appendix K, but that effectively, as Christy said, that the value of it, the value of the sort of home office oversight here, and the obligation to exercise that oversight in relation to IFRS statements is preserved. I think that's where the information is that's useful here. What we would seem to be saying is that out there in the world generally, there are comparable audit oversight bodies and comparable audit oversight regimes so that we don't need to worry about it. I don't think most investors think that's true. That as a general matter in all countries in the world where foreign private issuers come to the United States, that all is well and we can just assume that they've got it under control.
Vin Coleman.
Well, Damon, I'm not sure I'll correct you, but I do think we should expand maybe the knowledge and the history of Appendix K a little bit where Bob and Sam were going. Because I think that, I mean, the statement, I just want to be careful. Appendix K does not give more information to an investor. They are additional audit procedures that were put in place back in 1999 to deal with some very specific risks. There have been a number of changes since 1999 that mitigate those risks, particularly around the auditing and the independence. So then when you move to the accounting, and I want to come back, Damon, to you, the point you just made, when you say oversight of the audit process, there are procedures now in place of the oversight of the audit process around the world that were not there back in 1999. So it's just we're in a very, very different world on the auditing. I want to clarify on the accounting. When you move to the, where you say, who understands IFRS? So let's go back. I just want to clarify at least recommendation. Removing Appendix K makes a lot of sense to the extent there is no U.S. GAAP in a filing. So if the reconciliation goes away, there's also foreign private issuers today who file with respect to U.S. GAAP primary financial statements. To the extent that that is continuing to happen, leaving Appendix K for that set of filings continues to make a lot of sense. To the extent that you no longer have U.S. GAAP and you're under IFRS, the notion that someone here in the United States understands IFRS better than perhaps someone in the U.K. or in Europe who has adopted IFRS for the last couple years, I think is an interesting notion, because we have to go back and say, what is Appendix K? It's not more information to an investor. It is, in essence, a third review, right? So you have a primary partner. You now have the quality standards that we have been talking about with respect to somebody who is skilled to make sure that that's done. And now Appendix K is now a review of the accounting by yet a third person. It was adopted because perhaps there were people around the world down in Chile who didn't understand U.S. GAAP. It got very complicated. And it was to make sure that expertise was around the world and that added procedure and that added cost. When you move into the world of IFRS, there certainly needs to be controls with the risk statement that you talked about, but the skill set is not as different. All right, there's going to be it's a new paradigm. The new paradigm is, as Sam talked about it, where we now have a global organization where we need to look at the consistency of the implementation of IFRS around the world. It's a different challenge, and it's a different quality control procedure that needs to be put in place. Right? It's just different. And the PCAOB does look at the overall quality controls and procedures of the firm. So I just think that we're moving into a different world, and there needs to be a different mechanism to control the risk that you suggested.
Bob Kippers.
Vin, I think, was more articulate than I planned to be, so those are basic points. I did want to correct the record. I do know that Bogota is not in Chile, just in case anybody picked up on that. I do think that the, take Vin's point just a step further. Let's say you had a U.S. company filing in the U.K., and that we had a different world where U.S. GAAP was accepted in the U.K., having a file reviewer in London review our U.S. GAAP financials for quality purposes doesn't make a whole lot of sense. You know, just as I would not be the best file reviewer on an IFRS-based financial statement because I wasn't steeped and trained in IFRS the way many of the folks in London can do today. So I think the key is the accounting. And in a reconciliation, what you're always looking for is understatement, because I'm trying to translate from, whatever gap, French gap, to U.S., and you're worried about people missing reconciling items. I mean, it's rare that you would find, unnecessary reconciling items. It's do you have all the differences? Can a U.S. investor figure out where that reconciliation gets you down to the net in U.S. GAAP terms? So I still think there's legitimacy to the point that once, if U.S. GAAP remains a possibility for a filer, and we have a bunch of foreign clients that use U.S. GAAP today, so they don't reconcile, then I think that requirement remains, there's efficacy to it, and I think it would continue to improve quality.
Cynthia Richardson.
It seems to me that these set of questions in Schedule K or Appendix K is related to the other topics that will be discussed of if the SEC does pass a rule to permit U.S. companies to elect to use IFRS as opposed to U.S. GAAP. Because reconciliation at this point in time provides additional information to investors, because there are material differences that exist between IFRS and U.S. GAAP. And to the extent that the future holds that U.S. companies can elect to use IFRS, at least during the transition period, until accountants and staff here truly are well-versed technically in IFRS, and the curriculum in the schools gets changed for training future accountants, that that does provide important information so that investors can understand more fully what the differences are so they can interpret the results accurately. So maybe Schedule K needs to be revised as opposed to eliminated if reconciliation is eliminated for foreign companies.
Greg, if I might just make a comment, maybe add to the question a little bit. Appendix K certainly does deal with the accounting and with a gap, U.S. gap, whether it be in a reconciliation or other form. But it also deals with other matters such as auditing. There are some limited procedures directed towards knowledge of auditing and other regulatory matters. So I'd be interested to hear some comment as it relates to those aspects of Appendix K that deal with these other things as well.
You can't see the tent car. Is that Sam? Is that yours or Bob Tarolo? All right. Sam Ranzilla.
Once again, I think it's important to clarify that Appendix K is not a part of the argument of domestic registrants going to IFRS. Those are two very different situations, and I just think it's important that we understand that Appendix K deals with a foreign private issuer only and does not go to the concept release that the SEC has issued with respect to domestic registrants going to IFRS. Appendix K is outside of that. To maybe address Tom's points on that, Appendix K does go more than just to the U.S. GAAP reconciliation and does address the auditing and the independence standards. Again, from our perspective in looking at our practice, a lot has changed since 1999 with respect to auditing standards and with respect to independence. First, the fact that we're here today, the PCAOB and the registration and inspection process was not there in 1999. Secondly, AS5 and the whole integrated audit methodology that the largest firms apply across the globe. Third, back in 1999, the SEC would accept auditors' reports that said, we have conducted our audit in accordance with, to stay with Bob's tone, Chilean gas, which we believe is substantially the equivalent of U.S. gas. And U.S. gas back then was the state of art because it was prior to PCAOB standards. Since 2000, the SEC, or 2001, the SEC has removed the ability of foreign auditors to state that we've done an audit in accordance with our GAAS, and we believe that's substantially equivalent and has required an affirmative statement that it's been in accordance with either U.S. GAAS or PCAOB auditing standards. And back at the time that Appendix K was written, that discussion around auditing standards was it really equivalent? Now there is a positive assertion that it's been applied in accordance with today PCAOB standards. I think that's several very significant changes in the landscape as it relates to foreign auditors, and in our view causes us to believe that In a world where there is no U.S. GAAP reconciliation, it's hard to justify continued the other elements of Appendix K. And I guess I would analogize it to another situation, and again, going back to the point in a world where IFRS is the primary financials, there's no U.S. GAAP reconciliation. Think about what you're asking, what would you be asking that filing reviewer to do? And think of it in the context of what if you asked an inspector at the PCAOB to go do an inspection, but don't worry about the gap. just go deal with the auditing standards around but just don't worry about how they've applied the accounting principles. I don't know how you do that. And that's in essence what you might be asking a filing reviewer to do. And is that something where they can be both effective and efficient in a world where they're not addressing the application of the accounting principles?
Dick Dietrich?
Let me begin with an apology because I feel like a foreigner in a foreign land here, which is to say that I'm neither familiar with the creation of K, nor am I really familiar enough with current procedures under the PCAOB. But I'm understanding the following, I think. When Appendix K was adopted, members of the SECPS were U.S. public accounting firms and not their international affiliates. So if we pick the Chilean firm, for example, and with apologies, Bob, apparently we're going to continue to pick on your office in Bogota, Chile. At that point, there would be a reason to, from the SECPS's view, to bring this in as a way of assisting in the regulation, effectively, of an audit that was being conducted by a different firm in a different company that was part of the umbrella organization of one of the other major international accounting firms. My understanding now, though, is that that firm in Chile is a registered public accounting firm with the PCAOB currently. Right? And so, therefore, it's required to comply with all of the regulations as a public accounting firm on its own right. And so, frankly, I'm having a hard time understanding why there's any need for this at all anymore under any circumstances, regardless of whether we're talking about IFRS or not. So I guess I apologize. I'm leaving you with a question rather than a comment.
Well, we'll allow some of the other SAG members to respond to the questions, some of the questions that Dick has raised. Damon Silvers?
Well, before I respond, maybe you can answer. Maybe I'll rephrase Dick's question. Is it the case today that if a foreign firm, whether or not an affiliate of a U.S. firm, is the auditor of a foreign private issuer's financial statements, which then, assuming these changes at the SEC occur, which then are filed without GAAP reconciliation in the United States, in that arrangement today, is the PCAOB in a position to assert its full authority, inspection authority and enforcement authority in relation to that foreign firm? And two, is it your view that the PCAOB, I'm asking the PCAOB staff, is it your view that the PCAOB has the resources currently to do that with the foreign firms that could be playing that role in that context, if it's true that you actually have the full authority that you would have vis-a-vis a U.S. firm? Anybody answer that?
You want me to help you out? They don't want to. I'll respond for them.
I was just going to say, I'm not sure.
I'm not sure I understand why the question can't be answered by the PCAOB itself.
Well, I'm just saying I'm not really probably in the best position to respond to the question given my responsibilities. Kayla Gillen perhaps would like to.
I'm going to give it a shot. Hey, if I'm wrong, somebody at their table tell me. Yes, we have jurisdiction over every account who issues a report for a U.S. Traded company, and they have to follow PCOB's auditing standards. The resource question is much more difficult, and it has to do with, and I think we've talked about this, our ability to engage. We have releases talking about how we engage with the home country regulators and determine the level of reliance and interaction that we need. So it is a country-by-country specific analysis as to our resource issue on the inspections side. But, yes, they're completely under our jurisdiction. Correct me if I'm wrong, someone.
I mean, my comment about this, which I'm not at all surprised by that answer, my comment about this is that so long as there are resource constraints here, that it's helpful to investors to engage the resources of the home of the parent firm, more or less, in this process. And that while it's true that the language in Appendix K that relates directly to the reconciliation process will be superfluous once there is no reconciliation process, that the language that relates, as the handout states, to ensuring the knowledge of the audit, the engagement teams, quote, the engagement team's familiarity with an understanding of the applicable U.S. Independent standards, right, and auditing standards is quite relevant. And in a world in which the board is resource constrained, having the involvement of the parent firm in policing that seems like something helpful and ought to be retained.
Joe Carcillo.
Yeah, I'm going to piggyback on what Damon said. I didn't know where he was going to go, but I think that's essentially the issue. And with Kayla's response, I think where I would go with that is that to the extent that the board makes a country-by-country specific decision as to rely on regulators there as to how robust their inspection process is, that's essentially what we have in place. But to the extent that there are certain countries where the inspection process is not as robust, it would seem to me that there's an issue for the board to be doing even more inspections there than they are in the U.S., and there's a question of whether the resources are there to do that. There's also an issue from the perspective of the firms, which is Appendix K. Now, I heard either Sam or Bob, I forget which one, said they're not proposing to get away from the inspection of their affiliates. They're just trying to get away from the review of what will not even be there anymore, a reconciliation that'll be gone. But I would argue, and I'd be curious to have the firm people here respond to this, I would argue that the inspection process, the internal firm inspection process for foreign affiliates should be even more aggressive and more robust than it is in the United States for two reasons. In the United States, you have private securities litigation that acts as a disciplining mechanism. In some foreign countries, you don't have that. Secondly, in the United States, if you had an extremely rogue auditor, the United States Department of Justice gets interested. If you have an extremely rogue auditor affiliated with your firm in Chile, Bob, then you have to rely on extraterritorial reach of the U.S. criminal laws to get at that person. So I would say the risk is greater when we rely on Deloitte Chile than when we rely on Deloitte U.S. And I'd be curious to hear the firms talk about the relative intensity of internal inspections in these foreign affiliates vis-a-vis what happens in the United States.
Bob Kippers.
Okay. Our Chilean firm actually has been inspected by the PCAOB. I don't know why I picked them. I do think there's a couple things that, and I don't know whether this is good or bad. This Appendix K and the whole dynamic around it at its inception was essentially what some might call a gatekeeper provision. This is on the theory that, you know, the U.S. firm is the gatekeeper to the U.S. market. We are not a parent of any foreign affiliated member firm in no way, shape, or form. However, I am a little jealous of the reputation of the U.S. firm and our relationships with the SEC and the other regulators. So, you know, it is in my interest to see the best performance possible with respect to any of our foreign affiliates that serve clients in their country that then come into the U.S. capital markets. You know, whether or not in a world where we now have PCAOB direct inspection, we do have, in our case, I think most of the networks do, a firm-on-firm global inspection that's administered by our umbrella organization. And we also have adopted, essentially within our firm, without any, this isn't necessarily universal, but we have a credentialing program that anybody who works on a U.S. filer, whether it be a subsidiary of a U.S. company or a foreign filer in their own right, has to be credentialed by the global organization as in terms of their knowledge of U.S. GAAP, GAS independence requirements. None of that was there in 1999. All of that has changed. I think Dick's point, and he was absolutely right, the fact that those firms have direct registration and the PCAOB has both authority and responsibility, does change it. I mean, if it's viewed as if the firms are being viewed as trying to get out of something, I don't think that's the case. I think we're suggesting that in the new world, it's going to be far less meaningful than where it's been in the last 8 or 9 years, and we should really seriously rethink the necessity of it. But I think we also shouldn't overplay the efficacy and importance of Appendix K. I think it has caught some things, absolutely, but I don't think it's a panacea in any way. I think the other things I mentioned are much more important to enhancing quality.